an Osho talk.
Zen, the Diamond Thunderbolt,
number 2.
Toku-san came to Isan's temple, carrying his pilgrim's bundle under his arm. He crossed the lecture hall from east to west and west to east. Then, staring around, he said, "Mu, Mu," and went out. Toku-san reached the gate, but then said to himself, "I should not be in a hurry." So he dressed formally and entered a second time to have an interview. Isan was sitting in his place. Toku-san, holding up his kneeling cloth, said, "Osho." Isan made as if to take up his staff. Then Toku-san gave a "kwats" shout, swung his sleeves, and went out. With his back turned to the lecture hall, Toku-san put on his straw sandals and went off. In the evening, Isan asked the chief monk, "The new arrival, where is he?" The chief monk said, "When he went out, he turned his back on the lecture hall, put on his sandals, and went away." Isan said, "Someday that fellow will go to an isolated mountaintop, establish a hermitage, and scold the Buddhas and abuse the patriarchs." On another occasion, Maya Oku, Nansen, and another monk were on what in those times was called a nature pilgrimage, or cloud enjoying, meaning going like a cloud, flowing like water, enjoying the mountains, playing in the streams and lakes. At the same time, they intended to interview Kinzan. On the way, they met an old woman, and they asked her, "Where do you live?" "Here," she said, and the three went into her tea shop. The old woman made a pot of tea, brought three cups, and put them on the table, and said, "Let the one who has God-like power drink the tea." The three looked at each other, but nobody said anything, and nobody drank the tea. The old woman said, "This silly old woman will show you her full power. Just watch." And she took the tea, drunk it up, and departed. One day, Joshu visited his brother monk's lecture hall. He stepped up to the platform, still carrying his walking stick, and looked from east to west, and from west to east. "What are you doing there?" asked the brother monk. "I am measuring the water," answered Joshu. "There is no water," said the monk, "not even a drop of it. How can you measure it?" Joshu leaned his stick against the wall and went away.
Melissa. These small anecdotes belong to a world which has disappeared. The world of the seeker . The world to know oneself, we have lost longer. It is no more the same world in which these anecdotes happen. Now nobody goes on a pilgrimage like a cloud. Now nobody is capable to be so light and free like a cloud. Everybody is burdened with prejudice, all kinds of nonsense. Nobody seems to be interested at least in one thing, that is himself. Man's mind has become objective, and it has forgotten a language that was of subjectivity. He looks out, and he has looked deeply in the outer world, in the form of different sciences. It has penetrated matter to its very innermost being. It has reached to the farthest star, but it has forgotten one thing basic. Who is within me? Now all this knowledge of the objective world is of no value in comparison to have a little glimpse of the inner sky and its beauty, its sunrises and sunsets, its days and nights, its sky and its stars. The outer looks then only a paler reflection. Of the inner. The inner becomes more real and the outer becomes just a shadow. The past although was in many ways difficult, but on one single point, the search for consciousness, we are very lower on the grade. These dialogues you have to understand they don't belong to the world in which you live. They don't belong to the mind that you have right now. But intelligence has the capacity to enter into different realms of consciousness. And it is a tremendous experience that people have lived differently, loved differently, heard differently, a music, a dance, a beatitude, even if we can get little glimpses of the world that is lost, you will be able to find the track of your own Buddhahood. That was the dedication of all the intelligent people of the past, to find one's own kingdom, which cannot be taken away. Nothing can destroy it. Fire cannot burn it. Death does not happen in that dimension. Only roses of bliss, lotuses of ecstasy, and a freedom that has no limits. A joy comes to every fiber of your being. Every cell of your being starts to dance without any reason, just for the sake of being. One feels at the very highest peak of existence. One cannot ask for more. It has already been given. Just we have lost the way to our own home. These anecdotes relate to those seekers. They have become very foreign to us. That's why, even though we can understand the language, but we cannot understand what is happening inside, behind the curtain. The anecdotes look very ordinary, but they are not ordinary. There cannot be anything more extraordinary than these Zen seekers, their ways of inquiry, Tokusan is one great master. Before he became a master, he came to Isan's temple. Every master had his own temple, his own monastery. Disciples moved from one monastery to another monastery in search of a man with whom they can fall in love, with whom they can risk all. And the moment someone found a master who becomes more precious than their own life, that day was the most fortunate day for the disciple. Now there is no more to go anywhere. The home has arrived. Now one can settle. Deep in silence, deep in one's truth, one has found the significance of existence. Tokusan came to Isan's temple carrying his pilgrim's bundle under his arm. He crossed the lecture hall from east to west and west to east. Then, staring around, he said, "Move, move," and went out. Tokusan reached the gate, but then said to himself, "I should not be in a hurry. What has transpired is very simple. Tokusan said to Isan that I am just like a cat to moo. Are you capable of teaching an innocent animal? I am utterly ignorant as an animal. Are you capable? And I have been searching from east to west, from west to east, and I have not come across yet the man who can be my master. Because Isan did not say anything, Tokusan reached the gate, but then said to himself, "I should not be in a hurry. This has been too quick, this inquiry. I did not give enough chance to Isan. I should not be in a hurry." So he dressed formally and entered a second time to have an interview. Isan was sitting in his place. Tokusan, holding up his kneeling cloth, said, "Osho." Osho is a word signifying great respect, love and gratitude. It sounds also beautiful. Osho, Isan made as if to take up his staff. Then Tokusan gave a quad shout, swung his sleeves and went out. With his back turned to the lecture hall, Tokusan put on his extra sandals and went out. In the evening, Isan asked the chief monk, the new arrival, "Where is he?" The chief monk said, "When he went out, he turned his back on the lecture hall." These are to be understood not directly but in a very indirect way, turning his back on the lecture hall means he said, I am not interested in lectures, in words, in scriptures. He put on his sandals and went away. Isan said, someday that fellow will go on to an isolated mountain top, establish a hermitage and scold the Buddhas and abuse the Patriarchs. Anyone who does not know the tradition of Zen will think that Isan is condemning him. He is praising. He is saying that fellow was really made of the stuff a seeker needs to be made. First he came, and without asking a word, simply said, move, and without waiting for an answer, went out. I was simply watching him. He crossed the hall from east to west, from west to east, just to show me that he has been to many, many masters. You are not new. Do you recognize me as a seeker? Are you ready to be a master to a man who is almost as innocent as an animal? Before I could say anything, he went out. But then he thought that it is too quick a departure. I should give a little chance to the old man. Then he turned in and with great respect, simply said, also, but I could not accept him because he is made of a different stuff. There are two kinds of disciples. One who will insist to find the truth alone, and one who would like to accompany a master. Becoming his shadow, peacefully, silently, almost dissolving himself into the master, Isan remained silent without saying anything, seeing the fellow. But later on, when the head monk of the monastery asked him what happened, Isan said, someday that fellow will go to an isolated mountain top. The crowd is not his place. And he cannot be a disciple either. He is born to be a master. One day he will go to a mountain top far away and establish a hermitage and will blossom with such beauty that even the Buddhas will be ashamed and the patriarchs will feel jealous. It is a very strange way of appreciation. But Ishan seems to be a man of tremendous insight. Not a single word has been transferred, and he has looked into the very depth of Tokusan and his potentiality, and he is not the man to waste time with someone whose potentiality leads him to somewhere else. In ancient Egyptian mysticism, there is a very old proverb that it is not the disciple who chooses the master, it is the master who chooses the disciple. How a poor disciple can decide on what grounds he can choose a master? Only a master can choose a disciple. From his height, he can see the potential. Ishan saw that Tokusan is not a bodhisattva. He is an arhat. He will find the truth alone. He will become a great master, but a master of very few people. And certainly he will not become a disciple. That is not his destiny. Ishan has shown tremendous insight. Just watching simply ordinary gestures, he could see the very inner depth of Tokusan, and what he says really happens. Tokusan finally became a great master on his own. He went to many more masters after Ishan, but everywhere he behaved in such a way that nobody could accept him. Every master he visited could see the great potential in him, but he has to find it himself. He will not take somebody's help. That is not simply in his nature. And when Tokusan himself became a master, he was really in a mountain top, all alone. But his glory His name is spread like wildfire, that another man has blossomed into the totality of Buddhahood. And hundreds of people came to him. Isan is saying that a man of clarity and enlightenment can see through you, through and through, what you are and what you can become. And a man like Isan, out of compassion, will not interfere, will not say a single word to such a man who can become a master on his own sooner or later. Let him find any help to such a man will be a distraction. On another occasion, Maya Oku, Nansen and another monk were on what in those times was called a nature pilgrimage or cloud enjoying, meaning going like a cloud, flowing like water, enjoying the mountains, playing in the streams and lakes. At the same time, they intended to interview Kinzan, who was an old and famous master. On the way, they met an old woman, and they asked her, "Where do you live?" "Here," she said, and the three went into her tea shop. On the mountain top is Kinzan's temple, and just at the foothills, this old woman, but she is no ordinary woman. When she said here, she was not using the word in the dictionary sense, she was using the word in the existential sense. "Where do you live?" And she said, "Here. Where else one can live?" And the three went into her small tea shop. The old woman made a pot of tea, brought three cups and put them on the table and said, "Let the one who has godlike power drink the tea." The three looked at each other, but nobody said anything. And nobody drank the tea. God power? The old woman said, "This silly old woman will show you her full power. Just watch." And she took the tea, drank it up, and departed. Zen does not make any difference between men and women. And this old woman was a master herself, she used to live nearby the monastery of her master. Just to help people to show them the way. But she herself was a master, and once in a while she will play the game, and she played it perfectly. First she said, "Here," and the three misunderstood. They entered into her hut. They thought simply she is running this small tea shop. They ordered tea. The woman prepared the tea. But bringing the teapot and three cups, she also proposed a condition that whosoever can show God-like power can drink the tea. This is no ordinary tea. And I don't serve anybody just X, Y, Z. So God-like power. All three looked at each other. Nobody was courageous enough to show himself. Otherwise, everybody is a god. Seeing the situation, the old woman said, "This silly old woman will show you her full power. Just watch." Each of his words is significant. And she took the tea, drank it up, and departed. God-like power does not mean anything else than acting spontaneously without any thought. Just naturally, all three were capable of doing that, but they started thinking about God-like power. "My God, I don't have God-like power. Certainly I cannot drink the tea. This woman seems to be very dangerous. What a condition. She has not asked money for the tea. She is offering the tea free just so your God-like power." And because they all three could not manage to be spontaneous, she said, "This silly old woman will show you her full power. Just watch. Perhaps in watching, you may arrive to your own God-like power." And she took the tea, drank it up, and departed. Nowhere in the world such strange stories has happened. And these are not stories, but historical incidents. One day Josu visited his brother Mang's lecture hall. He stepped up to the platform, still carrying his walking stick, and looked from east to west and from west to east. "What are you doing there?" asked the brother monk. "I am measuring the water," answered Joseph. "There is no water," said the monk. "Not even a drop of it. How can you measure it?" Josu leaned his stick against the wall and went away. A very strange anecdote. But Josu is using the word water in the same way as you use the word the water of a diamond. There is not a single drop of water in a diamond. But its very diamondness, its very shining nature, Josu said, "I have looked from east to west, from west to east. I am trying to measure the water of your temple, of your people, of you. But the brother monk could not understand the language that water is used for something else also than water. Your eyes have a certain water. Your individuality has a certain water. Just as diamonds have a certain water. Their value is judged by their water. How clean, without any dirt, without any flaw. If you can see the diamond without any flaw, its value becomes higher. The value depends on the water. And I can understand Josu, because when I see people, I also see how much water, how much value is this diamond. Is there purity? Is there love? Is there trust? Is there a possibility of blossoming into a flower? Is there life in abundance? Is there any possibility to take the quantum leap Joseph, in desperation, leaned his stick against the wall and went away. That too is significant. His dropping the walking stick means that it is enough. I have surged from east to west, from west to east, now no more searching. It seems people with water, with potential dimensions, are no more available. I am not going anymore to search. Joseph is a master and he is in search of disciples. This is a totally different thing. A disciple searching for a master is one dimension. Stumbling. In darkness groping, knowing not exactly what he is seeking. What are the attributes of the Master? But there is another kind of seeking too. The Master seeking the disciple, he knows exactly what he is looking for. The potentiality, the power, how much you can grow. Are you able to be free from all bondage? Those were different days, golden days, when disciples were roaming and searching for masters, masters were roaming and searching for disciples. Once in a while there was a meeting on some crossroads. The master meets the disciple. And there is instant recognition. The master can see through the disciple, and the disciple can see. In the fragrance of the master, in the presence of the master, a tremendous energy field in which he becomes drowned, drunk. You know it. You don't have to be explained about it. After your every meditation, you go from this Buddha hall almost drunk. Drunk with the divine. Drunk with the unknown exploration. Drunk with the courage that you sought to go inwards and touch your very center. A tremendous victory. There is no other greater victory. You have found your sources of waters. You can quench your thirst. The Zen poet Manan has written, unfettered at last, a traveling monk, I passed the old Zen barrier. Mine is a trustless stream and cloud life of those mountains which shall be my home. This series is dedicated to the clouds because they represent the freedom of movement. They don't bother about boundaries of nations. They don't carry passports. And they don't ask anybody. The whole sky is theirs. Men should also be as free as a cloud. Why there should be any boundary? Why there should be any division between humanity? Why one nation should become a prison rather than giving freedom? It makes you a slave. You don't feel it because the prison is big. You will feel it only when you want to cross the boundaries. Immediately you will be stopped. Where is the permission? Where are you going? The clouds does not believe in any boundaries. Is pure symbol of freedom, unfettered at last, a traveling monk, I pass the old Zen barrier. Even Zen finally has to be transcended. Finally, you have to become so meditative that you don't need to meditate anymore. Meditation becomes your very being. That is what is called the old Zen barrier. The day your very existence becomes meditative, you don't have to sit down at a certain hour to meditate in a certain way. The day when whatever you do meditatively. You sleep in meditation and you wake up in meditation. You have passed the old Zen barrier. Mine is a trustless stream and cloud life of those mountains which shall be my home. The cloud is going towards the mountains, towards the heights unknown, untraveled, far away, farther than the reach of ordinary mortal human beings. Says so another poet, earth, mountains, rivers, hidden in this nothingness, earth, mountains, rivers reveal spring flowers, winter snows. There is no being, nor not being, nor denial itself. In this silence you can understand this purity of transcendence, neither life nor death, but pure eternity. Kokoku has written, riding backwards this wooden horse, I am about to gallop through the void. Would you seek to trace me? Ha! Try catching the tempest in a net. A man of meditation certainly becomes so free that trying to catch him in a net is like trying to catch a tempest in a net. And all organizations are nets. And all nationalities, races are nothing but nets. They are all trying to catch you in different boundaries, in different chains. And our unconsciousness is such that we even glorify into our chains because our chains are made of gold. Because our chains are very ancient. Because our chains are all that we have. Men can become a cloud passing all barriers, can attain to total freedom, where he is not a Hindu or a Mohammedan or a Christian. Where he is not even his body or his mind, where he is pure consciousness, just being. This moment you can enter into this being. It is available. Just you have to stretch your hand a little. Manisha has asked, Is the enlightened man always a rebel? Manisa, all rebels are not enlightened, but all enlightened men are rebels. One can be rebellious without being enlightened. Lenin is a rebel. Marx is a rebel. Tolstoy is a rebel. Kropotkin is a rebel, but none of them is enlightened. And their rebellion will remain concerned with very ordinary social, economic, and political situations. The enlightened man is also rebel, but his rebellion is not with ordinary things, that whether Harijans should enter into a temple or not. His rebellion is of a very high nature. His rebellion is that all that is written is false, because the truth cannot be brought into words. His rebellion is that don't look backwards, don't look forwards, just close your eyes and look in. And this very moment, your wings open and the whole sky becomes available to you. When I say that the enlightened man is always a rebel, I don't mean socially, politically, economically. I mean only existentially. He is a transformed man. He knows his own being, and he knows his being's splendor. He is no more on any power trip, because he cannot have more power than is blossoming within his own self. He is not afraid of death, because he knows that death is a fiction. So there are rebels who are trying to change social forms, societies, communism, socialism, anarchism. These are ordinary rebellious people. And there are Buddhas who are transmuted their own being, who has found their own very life source, and finding it, they have transcended all that seems to be so important to people. All this nonsense of being Hindu or Mohammedan or Christian becomes so childish A Buddha simply can laugh at human stupidities. His laughter is far more rebellious than your so-called great rebels. Before we enter into our Buddhahood, just to relax, old man Finkelstein and grandma Feigenbaum are sitting together on the porch of the old people's home. They are talking about the good old days when Fink asked grandma, "Did you ever bless?" "I sure did," replies grandma. "I blessed 4 times in my life. The first time when I undressed in front of my husband. The second time when I undressed in front of my lover. The third time when I took money for it. And the fourth time when I paid money for it. How about you?" The Fink is silent for a moment and then says, "I blessed 2 times. The first time when I could not do it the second time, and the second time when I could not do it the first time." Paddy wants to immigrate from England to America. He has an interview at the American Embassy in London. The consul asks him, "Mr. Murphy, why do you want to leave England and come to America?" "Simple," replies Paddy. "America has Ronald Reagan, Johnny Cash, Bob Hope, and Steve Wonder. England has Margaret Thatcher, no Cash, no Hope, and no Wonder." Amos McTavish comes home unexpectedly to find his wife making wild love to a strange man. "What the hell is going on here?" shouts McTavish. "Who is this guy?" His wife stops and looks for a moment and replies, "I suppose that is a fair question." And turning to the stranger says, "What is your name anyway?" Miss Piss Poos, the school math teacher, is trying to teach little Albert how to subtract. Now Albert says, Miss Prispoos, if your father earns $1,000 per week, and if they deduct $100 for insurance and $57 for social security and $95 for taxes, and then if he gives your mother half, what would she have? Albert looks at Miss Prispoos and says, a heart attack. Nancy Reagan is worried about Ronald. He seems to be gaining more and more weight, but refuses to take any exercise. Finally, in desperation, Nancy takes him to the new fitness clinic downtown. Later, when she comes to pick up Ronnie, she finds the unfortunate president in agony. He is hooked up to a monitoring machine with wires coming out of all parts of his body. He is shaking and moaning, and his sweat is dripping from his body like a waterfall. Great news, Mrs. Reagan, cries Bruno Trukastit, the attendant. He has lost 5 pounds today. Wonderful, says Nancy. How did you manage it? Simple, says Bruno, and he goes and whispers something in Ronnie's ear. The president's body starts shaking and sweating as if he is running a marathon. Jesus Christ, cries Nancy, what did you say to him? Bruno winks and says, Bhagwan for president. Yahoo! Nibedana, this is good moment, give it be. Close your eyes. No movement of the body. Go in. Deeper and deeper. It is your own home. Nevedano, relax, let go, just die. This immense silence . This is your eternity. This is the only holy place and the only holy scripture. Freed from body, freed from mind, you are just a cloud. A pure freedom. An absolute consciousness. Nivedana, come back, but come back as a Buddha. Sit down with the grace and the silence and the joy which are eternally yours. Just, you have been busy in meaningless things and have forgotten yourself. Remember it. Remember it In your 24 hours, day in, day out, let it become a silent stream of remembering. You are a Buddha. Don't fall down. Keep your dignity. And suddenly you find the whole world has changed. Everything is the same, and yet nothing is the same because your vision is new. Can we celebrate on the Buddha?